Welcome back to the 2020 Podcast. I'm your host, Johnny Keith, and today we have a very special treat for you. We have
Bonet Bartron.
She is a screenwriter, she's a film director, and she is an author of a number one best-selling book on Amazon. It's called Whispers. Obviously, it's an amazing book. I cannot wait to have her share it with you. Let's just get
Bonet Bartron
on the phone, and let's see what she has to offer you. And here we go.
This is Bonet.
Hey, it's Johnny with Actors 2020 Podcast. How are you?
I'm good.
I just introduced you as a screenwriter, film director, and an author. I'm just going to start with your number one book on Amazon. It's called Whispers. What can you tell the audience about the book? Because I already know a little bit about it.
It's a satirical thriller. It's probably a little too close to reality in some places, but it's a lot of fun. It's about an urban legend that steals children, three women who refuse to take that as an answer, and they decide to hunt him down.
It sounds like something I would want to watch on Netflix or something my wife would say, hey, get over here. We are watching this right now.
Well, I will say that I've already had a couple little discussions about possibly taking it that way, but right now I'm just really enjoying the fact that I wrote a book.
Because everybody I talk to, they always say, you know what? Even though this COVID thing is horrible, it's kind of given me the time to actually do some things that I wanted to do, because you wrote it in like 3.5 months, right?
Yes. And thank God for the fact that I was locked up. That's all I can say, because it would never have gotten done on that timeline otherwise.
Wow. So you were an army brat growing up. So you were just always here and you were there. Your dad was a Green Beret. But when you were in Germany, did that have anything to do with being in the army? And how old were you when you were doing that?
So yeah, I lived in Germany twice. We moved there the first time whenever I was in elementary school. Then the second time whenever I was in high school, we lived on the military base Patch Barracks in Stuttgart. So it was definitely a military thing. We were like on a base surrounded by a bunch of military people. But it was such an amazing experience. And it's definitely something that influences everything in my life.
I mean, I know you did films, you know, with your video cameras and stuff when you were a kid, but isn't that when you were in Germany, it gave you the start because you had access to all that amazing equipment, like the editing equipment?
Oh yeah, I had a teacher named Mr. Fritz who just honestly opened up the doors for me in a way that I would never have really thought possible, especially in a military world or pretty much anything. Like if you don't grow up in the film industry, it feels like it's a million miles away. It feels absolutely impossible, almost like it's not even worth trying to pursue because it feels so lofty, right? But Mr. Fritz really lassoed that lofty feeling and like pulled it down to earth for me. And I mean, he was fantastic. He used to fill out all the grants that the government had so that he could get the best equipment for us. So I lucked out. I got to play with Final Cut Pro before it was really even a thing. Like I was in high school and, you know, I got to play with the brand new Final Cut Pro. And he actually even sent me to go learn the Final Cut Pro program from the people who were teaching the teachers because he was like, you know what? This is young people stuff. You go do this and then teach me how to do it. So he really gave me a lot of options.
That's kind of cool for you because you're getting the film after it's already been cast, it's already been done, and then you get to kind of just put it together. You're kind of like producing and directing right there.
For sure. I mean, that was definitely the thing that kind of elevated everything for me because I made short films and stuff as a kid, stole my parents' video camera, whatnot. But learning about editing software and realizing that there was this other, and I mean, I know nowadays everybody has access editing software, even on TikTok, etc. But like in that time, it blew my mind that there was such a thing as editing software. And it just opened up an entire new passion for me in the film base where like I absolutely love editing. And I, you know, I love working with editors. It's one of my favorite part of directing.
That's cool. So then that opened up other opportunities because one of the few people who spoke English, you got to be a host and you got to interview bands like Papa Roach and Ozzy Osbourne. How was that?
Wow, you are really good at your research. It was fantastic. Yeah. I mean, you're exactly right. Because I spoke English, because I was American, I got a lot of opportunities and I got to do things like Rock Em Ring and Rock Em Pak, which is the biggest shows in Europe. It's like Ozfest or maybe like Vans Warped Tour, but like all of it in the giant park. And there are thousands and thousands of people. It's way too much fun. So I got to cover that when I was 17.
Wow. And the stuff that you went and covered, did you also have to go back and edit the stuff that you actually shot?
I I did. And then I actually had a couple other people, including my teacher, Mr. Fritz, who would work on these projects with me. So sometimes I'd have a few of my fellow students on trains with me, and we'd pull literally all-nighters where we'd get in the train, go up to Dusseldorf from Stuttgart, which is like 4-6 hour train ride, do an interview. We interviewed Disturbed and then got back on the train and came all the way back to Stuttgart and had class at 7 o'clock in the morning. And my mom had one rule. I was allowed to do all of these things as long as I showed up to class the next day.
That's great. So you come back from Germany, and so from the business here, you started off as a PA?
Yeah. I just took whatever job I could get. And I mean, I don't know if you remember back in the day, Variety used to print what movies were in production.
Oh, yeah.
And Variety specifically had this one chart. And I went through and I did a bunch of research on all the movies that were shooting. And I really wanted to get on a movie with Chris Moore. Yeah, it was Chris Moore and Vincent Gallo. And I was like, oh, this is going to be so great. And Chris gave me my first shot. He hired me for 3 days, actually, and ended up keeping me for the entire production. And then he hired me on a bunch of other projects as well in different positions.
That's pretty cool. The Rainbow Bar and Grill. Did you used to hang out there? Because I read that you wrote something called Out There. How did you write with all the noise going on?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I love the Rainbow. And, you know, like we were talking about, I did so many interviews with bands and specifically metal. I've always been a big metal head ever since I was a kid. But when I first moved out here, I lived with a house full of roommates. And the roommates, oh my God, they used to fight like freaking cats and dogs. So I needed to find a refuge to write. And I started going down to the Rainbow and I'd sit there and they made the best chicken soup in the entire world. But the owner, Mario, he kind of took pity on me because I tried to write in the main area, like in the dining room. And he actually put an extra table in the back patio. And a couple of the bouncers that worked there used to keep it open for me because I'd come down there every night. Usually I'd work for 12 hours on a movie. And then I'd have 2-3 hours that I could really get something done before I went to sleep. And so I'd go down to the Rainbow and I'd sit in the back and I'd have my cup of chicken soup in this huge metal bar where everybody's screaming and having so much fun. And I found that the energy of everybody around me actually helped me focus as long as they didn't talk to me. And it was really great because the bouncers made sure nobody talked to me. And it felt like my own little special place. It was like my own little haven because, like I said, where I was living, it was tumultuous. Mm-hmm. So it was nice for me to run away.
Sounds like my neighbors. So you've done all the behind the scenes stuff. I mean, production designer, visual effects, art director, second unit, editorial, production manager. That's pretty good that you can appreciate everybody on there instead of just going, I'm the actor, screw everybody else. I don't know what they do. It's great having that foundation. I see how you gravitated towards being a woman film director, which is, I find, amazing.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, there are quite a lot of us. It's just that there aren't a lot that get the opportunities, to be frank with you. But I was really fortunate to just kind of get embraced by different crews. And I always knew I wanted to be a director and I wanted to be a screenwriter. But I knew that being a director was more like being a commander, where if you don't understand what each individual crew is doing, what each team is doing, that even somebody with a great vision is unable to translate it. And so that was probably the most important thing, was being able to spend time with these different crews and not just be able to speak their language, but work with them and understand why certain things are done the way they're done. So these were all things that really gave me a deep appreciation for crew. So yeah, I was really fortunate to be able to kind of take my film school on set.
Now that's great. I mean, where did your inspiration from writing come? I know your uncle's Bill Martin, who wrote Harry and the Hendersons, but was he your inspiration as well? Who else did you look up to get that started?
Interestingly enough, my mom actually has dyslexia and it was very difficult for her, you know, through her education process. So since I was a kid, she read to me and my sister all the time. And I used to memorize what she was reading. And so I'd like do the voices along with her. And from the time I was a kid, I was always like making up stories with teddy bears and telling my little sister stories. I made up like a world for her and her friends. And my mom started writing them down. And she just really always encouraged me to express myself in words. Like if my sister and I would get in a fight, she'd always say like, well, why don't you put yourself in her shoes? Explain to me her position. And as frustrating as it was for a kid to have to explain the position of like the person who I felt wronged me, in retrospect, as an adult, she really taught me how to empathize in a way that I think is critical to being a writer. Because being a writer, at the most pure form, in my opinion, is being able to find the truth and the empathy in every character.
Mm-hmm. So you've been in this business for 13 years, and you said you had been working on a feature to be shot 7 years in the making, and COVID happened. What film is that?
Yeah, so sad. But yeah, it's called Abducted, and it's definitely one of my favorite things I've ever written. And we are finally like casting the film, and we were actually supposed to be shooting that movie this year in the fall. And long story short, the fall has come and gone. So it looks like it's going to be a 2021 feature now.
But it's still going to happen because you got Billy Ray Cyrus, right?
Yeah, Billy's awesome. Yeah, so Billy's actually attached to both of the projects that we were supposed to be shooting this year. He was just playing a bit part in Abducted. He's playing a street performer named Joe Desser.
Right, that's great. So the actress Kimberly J. Brown is going to be in that, but you worked with her on Hell California as well.
Yeah, and she's also one of my best friends, actually. She and I met years and years ago working on another project and just kind of clicked. And it's a funny story because Kimberly J. Brown was the lead character in this movie, Halloween Town. And I was like, you know, that Marnie chick, the lead character in that, I was like, she is so cool. I bet we'd be friends. And then when we met in real life, I told her that and she was like laughing.
So one of the movies you wrote is Unbridled. And how do you get Eric Roberts to play that?
Well, to be frank with you, I worked on that with a team of people. I was in a big part of the casting process on that. I was actually going to direct that film originally, but they decided to cut the budget. And so I was like, okay, well, so long story short, I didn't have a huge hand in that, but Eric ended up doing a great job. Everybody who ended up signing onto that project did a really great job.
They couldn't afford you. You're an award-winning director. And they say, we can't afford her. So my grandma, she used to raise chihuahuas, and they have short hair once, long hair once. Do you have long hair chihuahuas? Is that your dogs?
Actually, I found her on the side of the road. Okay. She is a mutt, okay. And her name's Serendipity because I found her on the side of the road. I thought for a long time that she was a chihuahua and a terrier. We ended up getting a DNA test done, and she is an 11-pound miniature chihuahua and yellow lab.
What? How'd that happen?
I mean, right? And she has one blue eye and one brown eye, and she is the cutest, most crazy little dog, and she's actually the inspiration for my production company name.
So, on the telling where you were the set director, did you meet Holly Madison?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Holly, I mean, we have way too much fun at the Playboy Mansion. Mm-hmm. Oh, God.
Used to go there?
I actually went to the Halloween party for a few years after that production, but then half past, I haven't actually been there. Since I left California for a little bit. Like I said, I was shooting in North Carolina and doing some work in North Carolina, even as an actor, which don't tell anybody, okay?
Well, that was a question I was going to come up. I was going to say, well, how come you haven't gravitated towards the acting? I said, you know what? I bet you have done some acting stuff, but you just don't put it up there.
Yeah. I mean, I love the craft of acting so much, and I have so much respect for actors. I just know how hard it is on all the levels, from auditioning and the constant rejection and the feeling of not knowing, like, if it's your performance or, like, what it was. Like, I have so much respect for actors, but that is a hard life.
Yeah.
And it's a life that, like, I really enjoy collaborating with actors. And like I said, I mean, I love doing plays and stuff. And I do sneak off and do some plays every once in a while as an actor. And I've even directed a few. But in general, I do love being behind the camera. I'm definitely more of a, I guess I'm bossy. That's like the good word. Like, I like everything to be how I see it in my head. And that's where I get to do that. But I do also like being a part of somebody else's project.
So my question to you is, so back in 2006, I kind of started writing, directing, and producing as well. And I have a couple of movies up on Amazon, but the people were so mean back then and they could get away with it. But now, maybe because the Me Too movement and everybody has a camera, have you noticed everyone's nice now?
No. No, but I hear you. I definitely think there's been a shift in energy for sure. But I don't know. Like, I have always just tried to treat people the way that I want to be treated, which sounds super silly. But like, when it comes down to reality, I mean, the industry is, it's got its ups and it's got its downs. And the things that make it down, like, I think there's a whole bunch of us, and it sounds like you're one of them too, that are working really hard to make it so that the industry is more accessible to people who have been barred from it before, and also a more respectful place. Because I will say, I think that's one thing that perhaps Me Too, etc., but more than anything, I think just the fact that there are people who, instead of just allowing someone to treat them poorly, they say, like, that hurt my feelings. I remember the first time I saw somebody do that on set, and it was actually a guy who said it to a director on set, where he was like, that was really harsh, that hurt my feelings, I'm gonna need a minute. And I was like, holy crap, he's gonna get eaten alive.
Yeah.
And he didn't. And I was like, wow, okay, so something must be changing. Because, I mean, I have definitely had quite a few experiences on set. I mean, I was often the only woman on set. Like, that happened on more than one project where I was the only woman on set.
Mm-hmm.
And to be honest, I had a lot of guys that rooted for me and hired me and, like, kept me on their team. And I still have a lot of guys that root for me and hire me. And half my team are guys and half my team are women. And that's something that, like, I never thought whenever I first started out that I would ever be able to say that, that, like, there were half my team were women, because it was so far and few between when I first got into the business that now that's the thing I think that's changed the most. Is it used to be I'd walk on a set and it'd be like variations of white guy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what's mm-hmm. up, dude? But, like, to be frank, like, nobody was ever like, oh, well, you're a woman, you're not allowed here. You know, nobody ever came out like that at me. But, like, I felt it from the lack of representation.
Right.
Whereas now I will definitely say that I have seen a lot of people who I don't even think they were hiring people that looked like themselves on purpose. It just so happened that that was who they knew, so they hired them. But I have seen a lot of people taking the extra step to try to make sure that it is a much more inclusive situation. Maybe not as nice as it should be, but hey, inclusive, that's a good step.
Yeah. So what is your high in this business? I mean, you've done, you know, everything. So writing, producing, directing, what's your high? What's the best for you?
I will definitely say that directing is my absolute favorite thing. When I'm directing something and I get to see the world that's in my head appear in front of me, there's something magical to that. And it's unlike any other emotion. There's just the magic of being able to pull something out of your brain and see it tangibly in front of you. There's something really special about it. And I do also love writing. Both of those things, I think, kind of go hand in hand, though. I think the only reason that I've ever really had the opportunities that I have as a director is because I'm a writer. For example, Abducted. The first studio I brought Abducted to, they greenlit the film. It was interesting, though, because they were like, well, who are we talking about for a director? And I was like, me. And they were like, well, this movie is it's not a tiny budget movie. It's over $2 million. So, like, we really need to get a name on here. And I was like, cool, 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 cool. You want my movie, you get me.
Exactly.
And it gave me a lot more negotiation power than if I were not also the writer. So I think that was something that inadvertently became, you know, the feeder to each other. Writing is directing, directing is writing, kind of a thing.
So I have Sylvester Stallone saying, no, I'm going to play Rocky or you don't get my script.
That's right.
Somebody coming up in this business, a man, women, or whatever, whether they want to be an actor, writer, director, what advice would you have for them? So say 2021's happening, COVID's over, everything's back to normal. What's your advice to them getting into this business?
So I would say, no matter what, just be humble, but know who you are. Like, know what your worth is. And if you start feeling that you are getting no's, or you're starting to feel that things aren't really working out for you, take some classes. Make yourself better. Hone your craft. Don't worry about schmoozing people. Don't worry about those things. Really focus on what it is that you are here to do. If you're here to act, be the best actor in town, and just keep doing the work. Because eventually it will pay off.
Wow. So online, where's the best place that we can find you at?
Well, right now, our website, our official website, whispersbooks.com. I'm on there a lot. And I also check all of the stuff for the book. It's hilarious. That's the one thing I have to say about writing a book that has become such a lifeline for me during this COVID isolation. I get to hear the real emotions that are being pulled up from people from reading Whispers. It's made me feel more connected to just humanity than I have in a long time. And I don't know if that's the COVID speaking or if it's just the fact that I get to interact with people face to face. But whispersbooks.com that's definitely the best place to find us right now. It's got all the stuff about the book and it's got a bunch of other things that you can find out about me.
And it has over 100 reviews, most of them 5 stars, very few 4 stars, not even a 3-star, not a 2-star, not a 1-star. Usually there's some hater that will like put something on there, but you didn't get that.
I'm sure there will be eventually. I'm sure there will be eventually. No, I've been very humbled. Yeah, very humbled by that.
So, Bonet, I appreciate you so much for doing my podcast. I really appreciate you getting up early, taking time out of your day to enlighten my audience. I had a blast. I learned something from you. I was real excited. And thank you so much for doing my podcast. I really, really appreciate it.
Johnny, it was my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me on. I enjoy talking about the craft. This was really fun.
All right. Again, thank you so much. And we'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.
All right, Johnny. Thanks again. Bye.
Wow. She is so amazing. If you'd like more information on
Bonet Bartron,
just go to whispersbooks.com. We have a link in the description area. We'd also appreciate a review, whether it be on the Internet Movie Database or on iTunes or wherever you're listening to this number one podcast in performing arts. Season 5, Season of the Woman continues. Thank you, Bonet Bartron. I'm Johnny Keith, your host. Until the next episode. Bye-bye.